Today I have the privilege of presenting Dr. Geller. Dr. Geller has been involved in the applied behavioral science since childhood. She started as a subject in her dad's psychology research without no informed consent. She made the best of her experiences. Once she realized the critical importance and social validity of her dad's research, she decided to double major in psychology and media studies. She began as a New River Valley news reporter using her dad's research as her stories. She produced the proper installation of child safety seats, the creation of the road rage reducer, the impact of having a date on the alcohol consumption on college students, and the significance of the actively caring for the people movement. The AC4P movement has been a lifelong dedication for both Krista and her dad. The two of them continue to work together to educate people on the significance of actively caring. It only takes one person to make a difference. Krista graduated with a master's and doctorate in human development at Virginia Tech. Welcome, Dr. Geller.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Cassandra. I appreciate that. Can everybody hear me okay in the back? How many of you just came from John Drebinger's presentation, which was over in the hallway? John did a beautiful job of setting me up. I'm going to pay him later. Talking about actively caring for people. John, your dollar will be in the mail. Appreciate it. One thing we're going to talk about today is the AC4P movement. How many of you have a wristband on? Fantastic. We'll be getting you more wristbands. If you did not get a wristband when you came in, we have them for you. If you would like another one, we have them for you. Please let us know. What I want you to do during my presentation is, well, first let me ask, how many of you can multitask? We have multitaskers in the room. Now, my mom claims she can multitask. Research will tell you none of us can multitask. There's no such thing as multitasking. Dad definitely cannot multitask. But those of you that can multitask, I am okay with you multitasking during my presentation. I would like for you to think about a time in your life when somebody actively cared for you or you actively cared for them. John Drebinger gave us some wonderful examples just a couple minutes ago of what it means to actively care for the people around you. And we're talking about safety, but with actively caring for people, we're also talking about everything. Everything that we do, actively caring for people. So I want you to think about a time in your life when either you or somebody else, you guys in the front row, you have one? We got one? How many of you have one? Thinking about one? Just a couple of you. Is it really that hard? What I'm hoping is that by the end of this class, I'm going to shed light on all the actively caring for people movements that are going on. Because I don't think we often pay enough attention to the actively caring for people activities we have. And at the end of this presentation, you will spend the rest of this conference thinking about it. I'm going to do a couple of other things to you as well. Remember, my degree is in psychology and my father is Dr. Geller. I always have an agenda. So I will have a couple of things that I will do for you today. I'm also going to work on making it personal. John also in the other room made it personal. He did make fun of my father a little bit. John, you'll have another dollar in the mail for that. Thank you. Also, carrying it forward. Actively caring for people is all about carrying it forward. So we'll talk more about this, but with this wristband, what I want you to do is I want you to carry it forward. So when you think about that activity or that caring piece that somebody did for you or you did for somebody else, and you think about this wristband, think about carrying it forward and saying thank you to somebody else that might do something for you the rest of this conference. And because I've made it so obvious to all of us in this room, I bet you each one of us will see something and will carry something forward. So we'll talk about carrying it forward. We're going to talk about the impact of change. I'm going to throw perception in there because I'm often going to throw my father under the bus, but perception was the worst word he could have ever taught me when I was a young teen. I learned what perception meant, and perception is how I won every single argument from that point forward. I will explain later. I'm also going to go over the 7 life lessons. We have 50 life lessons, which is in a new book that my father has that was published by our new company, Geller AC4P. And there's 50 of them, but I'm only going to touch on 7 because we don't have all day. First thing I want to do, though, is I want to show you something. And I don't, how many of you are LinkedIn? I'm getting into this LinkedIn. I'm not a millennial, mind you. But I'm getting into it. I'm trying to get some of this stuff. I can't Twitter. I can't do some of that other stuff. But LinkedIn is fantastic. And on LinkedIn, this was posted. This is a police officer outside of McDonald's. Anybody seen this? This was fantastic. This impacted me. So this police officer sees this gentleman. He went into McDonald's to interview for a job. McDonald's said to him, "We cannot take your interview until you go out and you shave." Apparently he had a scruffy beard. So he goes outside. The police officer sees him struggling to shave, and he stops doing what he was doing and shaves him, just like you see here. Pretty fun, huh? He goes back into McDonald's for the interview, and according to LinkedIn and the people that posted this, he got the job. We weren't there to give him a wristband. Dad, I'm surprised. Where were you? We weren't there to give him a wristband. And did he receive the thank you that he needed in order to carry on that behavior? Because John Drebinger made a great point in the last room. When people finally have the courage to actively care, do we get the thank you so that we continue the behavior? Sometimes if we don't get that thank you, we don't want to continue the behavior. Or we're nervous to continue the behavior. So, keep your AC4P stories in your head. Unfortunately, this is not a workshop, so we can't share those stories. But, if you go to the website that's on your wristband, activelycaringpeople.org, you can enter those stories. Because unfortunately, we don't talk enough about the good things we do. You know, you can go and you can get negative feedback from somebody, and they'll tell you one positive thing, or maybe they'll tell you 10 positive things and one negative. You walk out of that room remembering the negative, right? We don't spend enough time talking about the positive. So this website's all about the positive. It's all about actively caring for people. Okay. I want to give you a little bit of background on myself, because I always believe you need to know where the author or the presenter is coming from. So, actively caring for people. Well, there's something up here I want you to pay really close attention to. Not Samantha, not Sally, not Sarah, Scott. Scott, folks, this isn't even a neutral gender name. This is clearly a boy's name, as my middle name, a boy's name. I got over it about age 32. It took me a while. You know, I mean, he did everything in his power to just mark me the minute I was born. Ran in there and wrote Scott. Scott! Oof. So, what else could I do but follow right along in his footsteps, right? I had a great teacher. Because while I was growing up, no joke, this was our license plate. I don't know, how many of you have a personalized license plate? How come sometimes when you see the personalized license plate, you think, man, wow, that's embarrassing. This was embarrassing. This was incredibly embarrassing. Not to mention, when I was younger, one of the research studies my father came up with was the buckle up sign. Please buckle up, I care. He came to me, I was a strong-willed age of 5. And he said, I want you to sit in the passenger side of the seat. And when we pull up to a vehicle, if they're not buckled, I want you to show them this sign. And if they buckle up, I want you to flip it and say, thank you for buckling up. Now, mind you, I'm a strong-willed 5, ladies and gentlemen. And I said, no. No, I'm not doing it, Dad. Too many people might recognize me. I'm a popular 5-year-old. I'm not doing this. What did he do? He got my sister at 3, 3 and a half. There's my sister. Please buckle up, I care. And again, if people buckled up, she flipped it. Thank you for buckling up. One issue with this is my sister got a lot of the middle finger. And my, you know, she'd look at my dad and say, "Dad, what does that mean?" And he would say, "Well, honey, they're telling you you're number one. They're just using the wrong finger." Now, that lesson to this 3.5-year-old, my sister is 38 today, and she feels incredibly important, as apparently she sees that sign a lot. So we continue forward. You know, he's not done. Safety belt research after safety belt research. The airline lifesaver, 17-plus years and 1,000-plus flights. This was also incredibly embarrassing when you fly with him and he's passing this lifesaver to the flight lady and he's saying, or flight gentleman, saying, "Now that you have ridden part of the safest part of your flight, please remember to buckle up when you get in your ground transportation." This was Piedmont back in the day. And what ended up happening was a memo went out to all of the airlines that said, "Watch out for the professor with the blue card." Now, you would think that this would discourage him. You would think he would say, "Ah." But again, this is actively caring for people. He was actively caring for people back in 1983. We were already set. We were already doing it. So what did he do? He made yellow ones. He made yellow ones. Now, again, as we've probably talked about throughout this conference, is we don't often know when we save a life, do we? We don't always know that we made a difference. Sometimes we don't get that reinforcer that we might need to continue the behavior that we're doing. Dad got the reinforcer. Because in 1994, he got this note. This man was a passenger on a flight. He heard the card being read. So when he got into his taxi, he actually fumbled to find the safety belt. And he remembered the message. So what he did was he actually looked for it. He thought to himself, "Well, I don't want to disappoint this crazy professor. I better find the safety belt." And he buckled up. And what happened? The taxi hydroplaned. Saved his life. So in safety, it is seldom we can point to a particular case. That's all he needed, right? That's all he needed. One thing, this thing is framed and on the wall. That's all he needed. Something to let him know he's on the right path. Even if it's just from one person, right? You get that one note sometimes from somebody, and man, does it make a difference. A thank you. And when a thank you carries that message, oh, we don't want to stop, do we? It's so motivating. It's intrinsic. We feel good about it. So what happened when he called me up? And he said, "Well, honey, I got a ticket." I said, "That's not surprising, Mr. Leadfoot. You got a ticket? How fast were you going?" No. "You need to understand, I'm really upset over this. I got a ticket. I got a ticket for not wearing my safety belt." I want everyone to breathe this in for a minute because I only gave you a couple of research studies. He got a ticket for not wearing a safety belt. And I said, "Dad, this is unbelievable." He's still kind of on the other side of maybe needing therapy at this time. I'm like, "Dad, this is amazing. There's a lesson here. There's a chapter. There's a book. There is a book here," which he said to me my whole life. "There is a book." We all need reminders, don't we? We all need coaches. We all need somebody to look out for our safety. That's all he was doing. Looking out for safety. Because if you think about it, and I'm going to say this pretty confidently, I don't think there's anybody else in the room here that knows safety belts as much as Dr. E. Scott Geller. We're all pretty confident about that. Can we feel pretty confident about that? Yeah, we can. And he got a ticket for not wearing his safety belt. What does that mean? It means even the best make mistakes. These are just some pictures of human error. Because even the best make mistakes. If you listen to the keynote this morning, some of the things he talked about, he was the best at being a SEAL. And he made mistakes. And that's what we need to remember. So when I dive into this, I told him, I said, "You know, Dad, that's why we have PBS. That's why I have behavior-based safety programs. Because we're actively caring for those around us. We're AC4P agents. Because all my life, he was my agent. this might not have been our best moment with each other. Might not have been our best moment. But where did I start out? I actually started out as a safety dummy. And I would dress up, and I would go to these, my high school, and I would do presentations. So I was already starting out as an AC4P agent. This is when I actually started to realize that the research we were doing was fun, was innovative, was capturing people. So I was having a good time. And I came to him, I said, "Dad, I think I want to work for you. What can I do for you now? I've been a researcher, what can I do?" "Got to go get your master's degree." I got my master's degree, came back. "What can I do now?" "Go get your PhD." Ran off, got my PhD, came back. "What now?" "Well, now you need industry experience." "Okay, now I'm over it. I don't want to work for you anymore. We're done." So I did. I went off and I got industry experience. I worked with Devon Energy at the Tiwi Pro. Talk about this for an AC4P agent. This little device sits in your car. When you find yourself going a little bit too quick, it reminds you. How many of you kind of start speeding and don't even realize you're speeding until you look down? It's a reminder. So we could easily call that as an AC4P agent. Out in Kosovo. But I want to tell you something about Kosovo a second. This right here. This was actually a bridge that was several hundred feet up in the air. And this is what they were stepping over constantly, over and over and over again. This giant gap. All that's right there is a little bit of rebar. We came back to them time after time after time. Because an AC4P agent, you don't give up. How many of you safety managers, you don't give up? You don't give up, do you? You don't give up. We're all leaders in this room. We're trying to lead our teams. We're trying to teach our teams. We're trying to show them the value, and you don't give up. You know, John Drebinger made a great point in his last presentation that we don't give up. So what happened to me? I headed on over to Anzo, Australia. Worked for Bechtel. Headed on to Anzo, Australia. I had my own AC4P agent. As I arrive, they give me this face net. The flies were apparently as big as birds. And I'm like, okay. He gives me this face net. He's actively caring for me. He said, "You're going to want to put this on." And did I ever want to put this on? But wait a second. The problem with it, it was extremely difficult to adapt to. Ever get to a project or ever be somewhere and they have some sort of safety rule or regulation that's meant to keep you safe, but it's hard to adapt to? You ever have that? It's difficult, isn't it? This was difficult. Although it wasn't a requirement, folks did not have to wear this. I mean, you either did the, they called this the welcome to Onslow wave, because you're just swatting the big flies out of your face, or you wear the mask. And my point, this is the only selfie I took, mind you. The point of taking this is what I've got to deal with all day long. So you think about the discomforts that we sometimes face, and it's change, right? Change. How many of you, what do you think of change? How many like change? Somewhat? A little bit? How many of you don't do good with change? Let me ask you a question. When you guys look at your cell phones, I have an update on my cell phone right now that I should be doing, but I'm so nervous that it's going to change my keyboard around. It's going to give me extra emojis, so then I can't find that one stupid emoji I use all the time. Any of you have that problem? So then you do the update, your phone is totally different, you have to relearn it. Yeah, let me ask you, how many of you out there know everything your phone can do? No, because they're always changing. And you know what else they're doing to these phones? They're making it more comfortable for us to use while driving. They've got so many wonderful driving apps. Use them? They've got great driving apps. So it's an oxymoron, isn't it? We're being told not to drive and use our phones, yet they make such fantastic items for us to drive and use our phones. So I want to do something with you all today. I want to do something different. I want to bring some change into the room, okay? So I'm going to play some music. And what I want you to do, if you know the song, I want you to give me a little hand pump. A little hand pump like this. Woo woo. You can whoop whoop if you want. It's optional. You can whoop whoop. If you don't know the song, you can just shrug your shoulders. I don't know, okay? If you don't like the song, I want you to give me some thumbs down, okay? Now, seeing as though we are at a safety conference, I need to make sure that my directions are being heard appropriately. So let's practice this once, okay? So I'm going to play a song. We all like the song. What are we going to do? Okay, that's very good. The whoop whoop was optional, but I'm glad some people were whoop whooping. So we're getting into it. Okay, what if we don't know the song? No. We don't know the song. Shrug. There you go. What if we don't like the song? Oh, man, that's... there, if you would like to add that impression, that's fine. Are we ready? Now, I've got a mixture of songs in here.
Don't you feel like crying?
Oh, we're whoop-whooping. Are we whoop-whooping? Come on in the back. Are we whoop-whooping? No, we just got some hand pumps. Some people are like, I am not doing it to this song. Okay? What about this one? I would like to make a point. I got this music from my father's iPod. I had no idea he was a Lauper fan, but Dad, it's cool. It's cool. You don't have to pretend now. It's fine.
God is great. Bears good.
Woo! We were whooping.
People are crazy.
Now, because I don't fail to throw my father under the bus, he thinks country music is an oxymoron. Country music. He can explain that later. Where are we? Are we whoop-whooping? And the back is kind of letting all of you guys take the front of this. You guys are really bearing the brunt. I mean, this is... All right, let's try it again. Yes! We're getting some... Either the front row doesn't want me to know. Again, this is my father's iPod. You're not going to hurt my feelings if you dislike the song. Yes, I can't believe it. This song got the most whoop whoop. Yeah, I don't care what you guys think. All right. Sam Cooke. Whoa, he's taking it. He's taking it. He's taking it. All right, just a few more.
Talk about sex now to the people at home or in the crowd. It keeps coming up anyhow.
Wow, I can't believe this one's getting in there. Okay. Are we? Yeah, I don't know where I... Dad, if you do this when you're biking, is that what this one does for you? We'll talk later. Talk later. Yeah, are we whoop-whooping? We're whooping. Hey, listen, the back is getting into it now. All right. Dude, come on, don't be embarrassed. This is not embarrassing. This is 1980s, folks. We're okay. None of us in here are millennials, right? Are we got... No. All right. Man, we got to take some research on this. This is amazing. Dad has no idea who this is. It's okay. I'll fill you in later. Last one. Ready? Last one. Last one, Motown, folks. I had to get my father back on my side for throwing him out all these other negatives. Motown. Now, why did I do this? John Drebinger would say to me, always have a point with what you do. And he's my coach. So here we go, John. This is my point. It was uncomfortable. How many were uncomfortable? Slightly uncomfortable, isn't it? You're lying. Really? It's uncomfortable to participate all the time. What about in this morning's presentation when they were splitting the room and we're having to like clap really loud and you know it's like it's 8 o'clock in the morning, this is hurting my head. Anybody? It's a little uncomfortable, isn't it? Because it's pulling you out of your box. Right? It's making you do something we don't really want to do. Can we just sit here? Do we have to? Don't you hate it when presenters say, okay, we're gonna play a game, we're gonna present, we're gonna do stuff. Participate, please. It's change. It's different, right? And that makes us uncomfortable. Actively caring for people is uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable because it's not easy. It brings us out of it. Brings us out of our comfort zone. Because it's change, right? It's change. And actively caring for somebody could be as simple as you've got food on your face. It could be that simple. But how many of you, that's a difficult message to give to somebody? it can be hard to do, you know. You just maybe you try to give them the psychological things and touch them with face. Can you see me? Something. But actually approaching them, even, and it's on the job site, and you have to stop work, and you have to tell them or have that conversation, because we want it to be peer-to-peer. You don't want it to be, I'm talking down at you, I'm talking at you, I'm talking with you. But that's uncomfortable, because we're stepping in the middle of what they're doing, because all of us have things to do, don't we? We don't have time to waste. We're busy. Any type A's in here? We got some type A's? Quick, quick. Type A's. How many of you are type B's? And then there's others that are type C's, and we're not sure what that is yet, because they're not raising their hands. So we're always going to be uncomfortable, because life is constantly changing. Think about the environment you work in. Think about the environment you drive in. It's constantly changing, isn't it? The road around you is always changing. You can't take your eyes off the road to answer a text. You can't do anything because it's constantly changing. Safety changes. Safety is uncomfortable. And that's why we want to always be an AC4P agent. But it messes with our perception a little bit. So you have to perceive that the other person cares about your message. And then when that person receives your message, they have to feel like you care. Okay, so let's talk about this a second. This is the one piece that you can take home. And after you learn this, you will win every argument this point forward. Because this is how I've won with Dr. Geller. Your PCC, premature cognitive commitment. It's premature because you're making the decision before you've collected the data. Before you really know everything about the situation, you're stepping into the box you believe it is. It's cognitive because you're making it in your brain. You're deciding. You're making it up here and you're saying, I believe it. And you're committing to it. We're committing. We're committing. An example, you know, if you walk to a job site and you see somebody sitting down, our immediate reaction might be, they're slacking off. Let me ask you another question. How many of you like to sit with your arms crossed? Anybody like to do that? It's my favorite position. But have you ever been sitting like that in a meeting and the presenter makes eye contact with you and you're thinking, oh, they think I'm bored, they think I'm tired, they think something, right? Because how often do we label someone's behavior incorrectly? We make assumptions that, their hands are crossed because they don't care. Well, I'm really going to focus on this guy. I'm writing his badge down. We do that? Yeah, because it's too quick to make that assumption. That's our PCC. Something happened that's telling us in our knowledge, our expertise, and our experiences that crossed arms mean I'm bored. When really, this is just a very comfortable place. Where else do I put my arms? This is great. So it's in our brain. Perception is influenced by experience. I swear this is one of my favorite cartoons. She's just alerting him to the fact that there's a pig, but I am betting you that gentleman has been called a pig several times. The only one that really knows what's about to happen is the poor dog in the back. Perception. Perception. None of us in this room have the same sphere of acceptable risk. One of the guys I worked with out in for Bechtel in the waste treatment plant in Richmond, this is what he said. This is what he said. I thought it was absolutely brilliant because none of us feel the same way. Isn't this an exhilarating experience? This was actually, the other picture was actually one of my people-based safety observers, bungee jumping. How many of you ever jumped out of a plane? So we have a different sphere of acceptable risk, right? You jumped out of a perfectly good operating piece of equipment. People look at you and say, why? Why'd you do that? What's exhilarating? I wanted to do it. When we talk about perception, what's your first impression? Survival of the fittest, maybe? But what I want you to remember is how many times do you walk out into that project, that job site, and you see something, maybe not quite like this, okay? This is a little exaggerated. But you see something, your first impression should not be that they're breaking the rules on purpose, or that they're doing it because they want to, or they're skipping the rules because, I don't want to be safe, I want to get hurt. That's not what's happening. These guys just need a lesson, and this is probably isn't the best way to do it, guys. Let's show you another way. So it's important when you do communicate to your teams and you do run a behavior-based safety system that you explain to folks that if you see somebody doing the at-risk behavior, it just means that they probably haven't had the necessary conversation they need to change the behavior. Yes, yes, texting and driving is with us. It's with us. Now, we have fear appeals all over the place that are supposed to help us with the texting and driving. And that's great. But unfortunately, it's kind of like what John explained in the other room. John said that he's never seen somebody stand on a chair, a swivel chair, and change a light bulb and hurt themselves. So probably these folks that are texting and driving, they've never seen anybody else get hurt. They don't have anybody in their sphere of life, family, or work that they can make a personal connection to that's gotten hurt while texting and driving. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes that personal influence to change the behavior. So as an actively caring for people agent, which you all are that now, if you don't know that by now, I'm indoctrinating all of you to be an AC4P agent. So now, as an agent, it is your job to help people see that personal connection so that they can change the behavior and make a difference. So I'm going to ask you a question when we talk about perception. We've been in this conference for a couple of days. How many of you have gotten a wimpy handshake? Oh, now come on. We can participate with this one question. How many? Okay, so we've gotten some, huh? We've gotten some, and when I say wimpy, you know, maybe it just doesn't have that tension, it's a little floppy, you know, maybe you think they're going to go in for a kiss, right? It's a little, it's not as strong as you'd want it to be, okay? Let me ask you another question. How many of you have given a wimpy handshake? So we're all getting them, but we're not giving them. So everybody in this room, or most of us in this room, are getting them, but we're not giving them. Is that that's the case? Wow. Okay, so I will tell you, I've ruined your handshaking abilities from this point forward, because what I want to ask you is, how many of you have ever shake someone's hand and afterwards said, how was it? How was it? More tension, less tension, a little more of a he-man, a little more of a lady, what do you think? Ever said that? Think about empathy and perception. Do you adjust your handshake to the person before you shake it? No? Some of you? Like, gentlemen, if you were to come up to me and you saw one of my rings and thought, woo, and sometimes they don't see the rings and then, you know, you're taking my finger off. But ever see that? You adjust your handshake. That's empathy. That's putting yourself in that person's shoes. That's reading the situation. Facial expressions, eye contact. What are they thinking? What are they doing? What's the perception and how can I adjust? Now, asking somebody, how was it? It's all about feedback, right? You receive enough positive feedback? We're a sad group. That's why we're here, though, right? That's why we're here. We're here to get that feedback, right? We're here to get that pump up, because that's what all safety professionals do. That's what these conferences are really for. You know, shut the doors, don't let anyone hear this. But we're all here really to beef each other up for a little while so we can continue what we're doing for the next year. Then we meet back here again next year and beef each other up again, right? Because we don't get enough positive feedback. Would you appreciate more positive feedback? Yeah. We got a pump up in the room here. Did you want a whoop whoop as well? Whoop whooping. We could use some more positive feedback. We could definitely use more positive feedback, more communication. Because that's what makes the difference, is communicating about the feedback, talking to each other. Do enough people talk to you? Do you talk enough? No, we don't talk enough. How many of you have sent an email or an IM or gotten one from the office right next door to you? And you know, we were talking yesterday in our class. Somebody received a message from the cubicle right next to him. I would just stand up and say, what? What do you have to say? Can you just stand up over the cubicle and address me? Do you have to IM me, right? Are we missing out on that facial communication? You know, technology is great. We've done a wonderful thing with it. But we've eliminated some of that personal communication. talking with each other. We don't do enough of it. Therefore, we don't share enough feedback. We don't talk with each other. My dad drew this as feedback. Where is it? I don't have it. Sorry. So it leads more to our positive consequences. So with that said, we want to employ more positive consequences. So let's talk more about it. And what are they? The most efficient way is to improve behavior and attitude simultaneously. You want to communicate about it. Soon, frequent, and behavior-based. So when you get that AC4P, when somebody actively cares for your behavior, you want to say thank you. And if you have a token of your appreciation, isn't that great? Now, some people can say, hey, thanks, appreciate what you did, and, you know, really great. That might not be the level of thank you might need. You know, sometimes we need a really genuine, ever gotten the thank you that really sounds like they just are checking the thank you box? Yeah. So unfortunately, we do need that genuine message. So as my AC4P agents, as you all continue throughout this conference and every day afterwards, you want to make sure that your message with this token is strong, that it's genuine, that you actually appreciate what that person did for you. You want to also be aware of the behavior you're rewarding. Now, Dad will talk about Carol Dweck and her book, Mindset. Fantastic book. She wrote a book called Mindset that talks about rewarding effort, not ability. So taking the time and saying, you know what, you got an A on that test because you studied for 4 hours. Not saying, hey, you got an A on that test because you're natural in mathematics, right? There's a difference. So that person now, okay, I need to continue studying. That's what gave me that A. Rather than someone that says, you know what, since I'm a natural, I'm going to go out and party. I don't really need to do this studying for the next test. She has some great studies in there that you can read about. It's fantastic. Carol Dweck, Mindset. Positive consequences promote success-seeking. So I want to throw this up here. Negative consequences promote failure avoiding. So I want to show this really quick. Dad likes to show this. One of the things I want to say about my father is he claims that he wakes up to an opportunity clock, not an alarm clock. Anybody? Listen, I'm an AC4P agent, but I can't get behind the opportunity clock. It's still an alarm, and I still love that snooze button. I do not fly out of that bed and say, what am I doing today? A couple cups of coffee and maybe. So that success seeker, you're waking up to an opportunity clock. Now, I like to use an example, and I'm going to use this example because my dear friend Chuck Pettinger is in the front row. Chuck is a golfer. Whether he's good or not, that's up to him. I'm not going to tell you his secrets. I am not good at golf. But I'll go out and play. I am accepting the fact that I stink. I absolutely stink. I am a failure acceptor. I accept the fact that I am no good at this game. If I avoided the game and I said, you know what, Chuck, I really don't want to go play golf with you today because I just stink, that would be avoiding. I'm avoiding the activity because I feel like I stink. Now, also as my failure acceptor, because I've grown up in such a positive, experimental household, you could possibly say that I am a success seeker. I'm hoping I'm going to get better. I go out and I golf with him and I think to myself, I'm going to get better. I'm possibly going to get better because he's going to show me some tips. So I'm seeking success. I'm seeking to get better at the behavior that I'm working on. I'm practicing. So again, I skimmed over this. Negative consequences promote failure avoiding. I want to ask you something. How do you promote intrinsic? How do you get intrinsic about the behavior? Just a few more miles and I'll break my distance record. Any of you do this? Some of us need to do more of this. Do we do a lot of this? I need to get back in there. We do this? Where is he going? Where are we going? Any of you do the on the street? You're going somewhere. When you do this in the gym, you're just looking at a TV. It's really difficult. Point is, he's motivated. He's motivated, but it's not soon certain, is it? How many of you in January will say to yourselves, I'm going on a diet. I'm getting back into the gym because they have a discount, right? One of the gyms going to have some amazing discount. How many of you might leap on that? You don't have to raise your hand. I understand. You know, you think, yep, I'm going to leap on that. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to do it. But when you get in there and you work out that first day, you feel great. And then by the seventh day, you don't see any results, right? They take a while. It takes a while. That is safety. We don't always see our results right away, do we? It takes time. You have to put in the effort. You have to put in the time because most likely the first day you start being an AC4P agent, you might not get that positive reinforcement right away to continue the behavior. You're going to have to tell it to yourself. You're going to have to be this guy. You're going to have to be this guy. It brings us to benefit from observational learning. Observational learning, that's all I learned my whole life. I learned how to drive by watching my father. As he drew this cartoon, also by watching my mother. He claimed this is my mother. Well, where did you learn to drive so fast, young lady? Seriously, I learned it from you, Mom. I really did. Observational learning. But I don't want to skim over feedback. I kind of want to jump back to feedback really quick. And I just want to ask you guys, you know, let's see what time it is. Yeah, I have a little bit over 15 minutes left. I'm feeling like I need some feedback. Feeling like I need some feedback up here. Yeah, I need some feedback. Can you guys just do me a favor? Can you give me a thumbs up? You can lie. Don't give me a thumbs down. This is not that game. Keep it up. Keep it up. Come on. I need this thumbs up because I need to ride the rest of this wave out. But I want you to take this thumb, put it on your chin. So two things are going on right now. Some of you are thinking to yourself, man, she's speaking at this conference. She's tired. Let's get her some coffee, maybe lay her down on a cot because she said chin and I went for my cheek, didn't I? Observational learning. Because we hear the verbal direction, but we see the observation. Our eyes tell us first the message before we often perceive or hear it, right? So we were quicker with my behavior. You know, we let that go and think, oh, she's going here. Because again, I'm asking the audience to participate. Some of us are tired. We really don't want to. So I'm just going to do what she's doing. She's obviously asking us. She's doing it right. Observational learning. So we follow the observation. Same with these guys. You know, the parents are quite upset with the fact that the police officer has pulled them over. But the kids are excited. He was at their school last week. They did not get his autograph, and they're back. He's back. He's back. He's going to give us the autograph. They are soon going to learn by watching their parents that this is not a positive example. Observation. How many of you have children? Have you watched your children observe and copy you throughout your life? Yep. Unfortunately, me too, Dad. I have copied you, and we'll just leave it at that. Leadership lesson 3, improve with behavioral feed forward and feedback. And what does this mean? Distinguish between feed forward and feedback. So I want to show you this graph. Feed forward is the activator today. This class today, it's the activator to remind those of the behavior. But what we have to remember is that the message is getting filtered through the person. And again, back to our PCC, we all have premature cognitive commitments. So the message is in front of us. We see that activator, but it's going to filter through my person based on my experiences, my knowledge, what I've done, where I've been, my education, my father, everything. It's going to filter back through, and that's going to determine what my behavior is going to be. Let's not forget consequence. Consequences drive our behavior. What's going to happen after I do this? Here's some examples. The police officer pulling over my father for not wearing a safety belt. The consequence was no ticket, was a ticket. But think about it for a minute. It was a good reminder. Sometimes we get those activators, and the consequence might be slightly negative. But what's it do? It reminds us. So it's not always a bad thing to get that reminder, especially if we don't get hurt. If we don't get hurt, it's a wonderful reminder. I'm going to go to this. How many of you, since I'm throwing police officers under the bus, how many of you see those blue lights actually have a physical reaction? Yeah, your heart starts beating, your palms might sweat a little bit, you look down immediately at your speed. You might then look at your inspection stickers, you know, and see if you've even had your car inspected in the past 5 years. Out here in Texas, we're safe. So you look at it, you're thinking, oh, what's going on? Am I in trouble? What if you see the cop like 5 lanes over? He can't even get to you. He's going the other direction. Still have that reaction? It's classical conditioning. Because what we've learned is that a blue light doesn't always mean positive. But how great is it that a simple blue light 4 lanes over is our reminder? How wonderful is it that all we have to do is see some blue lights and they remind us to check our behavior? I was out in London, Crossrail Project, and I walk out there. I'm standing with 2 safety managers, and I'm the one with the high vis that still has the crease in it because they've taken it out of the package, you know, right there for me. And then I have the hard hat that's so white it glows, you know, they can see me from space. So we're walking around the project. It's wonderful. I'm walking with these 2 guys, and I look really like the visitor. And you know what it's like anytime a visitor walks out into a project or a job site or anywhere. Anytime there's a visitor, people know. And they see me, and they immediately put their gloves on. Just a group of guys over here working in the corner immediately put their gloves on. The guys that I'm walking with, they're like, damn it, doesn't that piss you off? I thought, you know, this is a good time to teach these guys something. I said, No, it doesn't. Because if it took me to remind them to put their gloves back on, see, I'm going to think positive. I'm going to go down that positive road, and I'm going to assume that their gloves were off because they forgot, because they had a brain cramp like my dad when he didn't buckle up, because something happened to intervene between them and the behavior of putting on their gloves. I'm going to assume that. I'm not going to assume that they're not putting their gloves on purpose. I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to assume that they forgot. And if I served as that reminder, where's my wristband? Ooh, that's awesome. I'm glad that my presence in this nice crisp high viz reminded them to put their gloves back on. Fantastic. That's what we want. Because oftentimes, we forget, and the activation loses their impact. This was out in Australia. We had guys actually using the path of least resistance. See that path right there? But look at our barriers. See the barriers? Those are pretty sad barriers. I mean, we're going to take the path of least resistance, folks. That's the first thing we're going to do. Now, they were not in any danger at this particular point. But what are we doing? We're creating a culture, right? We're creating a culture that folks are taking the path of least resistance. So if this was an at-risk area, they might be unknowingly taking that path because we created the environment. So a lot of times, what you have to think about is you have to think again about change. The environment is changing constantly. And we have to be smart enough that we're telling our folks where it's changing and how. I was out in Onslow, Australia, and I was on a camp job, which means I'm living right there in these trailers that they're putting up. And the workforce was growing constantly. Like, I mean, they were putting up trailers, maybe 50 in a day. I mean, it was packed. We had over 10,000 employees. And so I'm taking the path that I normally take back to my trailer, and every day the path changed. Every day I forgot where my trailer was. And I looked like, I mean, I had one guy that looked at me and said, you have your PhD? I was like, listen, it's in psychology, so I don't know what that does for you, but it ain't in direction, so tell me where my darn trailer is. So, but again, nobody told me. Nobody told me that the environment would be changing at such a drastic event that I forgot, and I didn't make a mental note of it. It's just my camp trailer. Why do I have to remember exactly where it is? So we have to remember that we have to put up those activators and communicate. Again, I was in Australia. Here's an activator. Don't forget cutlery, 2013. 2014, I go back to that coffee shop. Same reminder, don't forget cutlery. Obviously, they were forgetting to put out the plasticware, the silverware, whatever it was they were forgetting to put out. They were forgetting. Simple reminder. How many have reminders? You live by your phone, maybe beeping and telling you sticky notes. I'm a sticky note person. If I can put sticky notes all over because it feels so good to pull it off and put it in the trash and see, I did it. That's my one little reminder that feels good. So we have to have activators, we have to change them up, and we have to be aware of them and communicate them. So again, you want to specify the desired behavior, become a behavior-based feed-forward and feedback coach, and that way you can improve with behavioral coaching. But lesson four, give more supportive than corrective feedback. How many of you heard this message before? What do you guys think when you see this message? Do you think this? Or, I was actually worked with a guy, I showed him this cartoon, and I said, do you feel this way? He said, no. When my supervisor calls me, I actually say to myself, what shirt am I wearing? Because I've been so amazing this week, I'm getting my picture taken. Anybody have that culture on their job site? You feel like this? That's the kind of culture we want to create. So those of you as leaders in here, this is what we want the culture to look like. This is it. So when you say, hey, I want to call you back into my office for feedback, it's a good day for feedback. It's a good day. Embrace and practice empathy. What do I mean by that? Come on, guys, try it. That's empathy right there. That's empathy. That's empathy. Think about what other people go through. Shot caller, try it. That's empathy. That's empathy. It's putting yourself in the shoes of someone else. It requires an emotional connection. So again, when we pass out our wristbands or we have the courage to actively care, get on a personal level. Get a meaningful connection with that person so they know that what you're saying means what you mean. Empathic listening. You want to also listen to what they have to say. Now, sometimes they might argue. People love to argue out of the at-risk behavior they're performing. Just walk away, be positive. Keep it positive. You know, I tell all my people-based safety teams, again, don't assume that they're breaking the safety rule on purpose. They're doing the at-risk behavior on purpose. Number six, customize consequences for self-direction and sustainability. Activate behavior with empowerment. Empowerment activates the goal commitment. And if you want to know more about SMART goals and everything we have, unfortunately, this is not a workshop, and I have 5 minutes left, so I can't tell you about all of it. But I can show you the consequences. True story, folks. Dad calls me up and says, you want to go out to dinner? And I should have thought to myself, no. Why would you be taking me out to dinner? Secondly, that's my third glass of wine, I'm sure, because I was feeling pretty good at that point. As he pulls this note out of his lapel, your tip so far. He said, now watch the waitress as I add and remove dollar bills. Sure enough, she was on us like glue. Embarrassing? Yes, very embarrassing. I didn't know where my tip was. But again, soon certain, she knew right away what she was going to get for her behavior. So she stayed honest the entire time. So behavior is fueled by consequences. Some behavior requires self-motivation. And then you'll hear my dad talk a lot about choice, competency, community-fueled self-motivation. Let me ask you something. Was this safety coaching? This is what my therapist and I talk about. Recently, this has been the majority of our discussions. 16 years old, folks, and I will tell you, if you have children that are coming up to 16 years of age and you want to talk to him about this study, please be sure to give your children my email address and phone number so I can at least talk them off the ledge. Because as my mother threw me the car keys and I was barreling down to the car, excited as can be to drive it, he was on his hands and knees deadbolting the sign. And I have to make a point. The picture does not do justice to the actual size of the sign. Okay? And my first comment to him was, Dad, I go to high school. I mean, I'll get beat up. I'm not driving this to high school. And plus, your phone number's on the back. But let me tell you about AC4P. Everybody on that road was holding me accountable. They were my AC4P agents without even knowing it. Why? Because every single one of them had my father's phone number. Did that direct my behavior? Yes, it did. It directs my behavior today because I can only imagine what would happen. Daughter dies while texting to famous safety belt use researcher, doctor. I mean, they would just, it wouldn't fly, would not fly. Does that direct my behavior? Yeah. Whatever it is that directs your behavior to do the safe behavior, it's okay. It's okay that that's what happened to me and that this keeps me honest and keeps me doing it the way you should do it. It's okay. Last thing I want to talk about is progressing from self-actualization to self-transcendence. Abraham Maslow, ever heard of him? Okay. Now, my father loves to bring this up to a class and say, what was the top of the hierarchy of needs? And he waits for everybody to say what? Fantastic. And he loves to say, perfect, they said the wrong one. Because what he wants to talk about is you've got your physiological needs, safety and secure, self-esteem, acceptance, self-actualization. But when Abraham Maslow died in 1970, he'd finished his last book and did not publish it. His wife published it. Top, self-transcendence. Because it's not about you. It's about, you know, Dad likes to say it's not about a selfie, it's about a helpie. I can't get behind that one either. It's not cool. You know? Baby boomer, I am not. So, no, but this is about going beyond yourself to help those around you, to help those in your work group, to help those of you at the conference, being there for other people. And what do we call this? AC4P. It sounds a lot cooler than self-transcendence. AC4P, going beyond the call of duty and helping somebody by giving them a small token of thank you. Because we already showed in this room we don't get enough positive feedback. So imagine if we spent the time giving that positive feedback. It's not about the self. It's fueled by win-win. I want to show you something. So when you see a behavior, you observe an act of kindness, you say thank you. Now, we have to be careful because our thank you needs to be genuine. Our thank you needs to be genuine. Even though we have a token of our appreciation, if the message does not carry the significance, people may not really feel rewarded for their behavior. Pass on the wristband. And then you share. Again, the website's on the wristband. And you can share. We can start talking more about positive things that are happening in the world than always talking about the negative and what's happening in the negative. Each wristband has an ID number. So you can enter their ID number and you can follow the wristbands. You can see where they've traveled. You can see where they've been. Yeah, they're rubber and maybe they're not going to last very long. You know, they may snap after a couple of giveaways, but that's okay. That's okay. And hear the stories. You can go there and you can read other inspiring stories. So again, all of you are thinking about that AC4P moment in your brain, whether it was from someone or by someone or to someone, you're thinking about it. You can go and you can read about them. It's motivating to hear how other people helped others, isn't it? It's motivating. It's sometimes that personal intrinsic reward that we might need in order to keep doing what we're doing. So I was at a conference in April. And I saw a presentation done by Dr. Mark DeVolder. It was absolutely fantastic. And I went up and I thanked him for his presentation. I gave him the wristband. I just said, you know, this kind of message was what I needed. This is what I needed to feel inspired. He sent me this picture on LinkedIn. That made me feel good. So he not only passed it forward to hopefully someone else, but he passed it forward to me. He said, thank you for giving me this wristband. The last thing I want to say, too, is Dr. Geller has reached the next generation. This is my son, who's now 16 months old, and he put the wristband on his wrist. Now, my father is allowed visits where he's not allowed to be alone with him. Let's just put it that way. Not yet. Not yet. We do have some research experiments that we're talking about, but I'm not sure what the future of this child's going to be, whether I'm going to fall right into that category. But right now, they are supervised visits, and he's only allowed to hold them for 30 minutes at a time, and then we leave. So Don't worry, I'm actively caring for the baby. And the last thing I want to say is anything that you've seen up here today, I would love to share it with you. I'd love to continue moving forward. You've gotten the wristband, and this is my personal email address, and you've gotten the Actively Caring for People card, because this is what we want to do. We want to make a difference. If you want information on how to roll a behavior-based safety process out on your program, out on your process and your project, I can do it. And I can help you talk you through it. So find me on LinkedIn. If you just want to have LinkedIn conversations about how you can improve something, I love LinkedIn. I'm on it as often as I can be. And I love to share stories. I love to hear what you've been going through so I can file that away in my own experiences. And I love to find out what I can do for you or how I can even help. So thank you very much.